And welcome again to Brew Crew Online. I'm Benjamin Orr.
And I'm Colin Bennett.
And yet again, it's still not the postseason, the off-season. I'm getting all my times confused now.
We are officially in the off-season.
Yeah. Wish it was the postseason. I mean, baseball would still be around and, you know, it'd be exciting still. And now it's just all speculation. Yeah, we're heading into the winter meetings in a few weeks. And I think it's next week, right?
Yes, it is.
We're heading to that next week. And there's a lot, you know, still in baseball to be talked about. A lot of free agents are still out there. The Brewers have been linked to two huge free agents, and we'll get into that soon. You know, it's been really interesting to see what's happened so far. There was that rumored deal that was supposedly going to happen between, I think, the Red Sox and the Royals. It involved the Red Sox trading, I believe, John Lester and Jacoby Ellsbury.
Right.
But who knows about that? We'll get into more free agency later and things like that, but it's been pretty quiet, I'd say, so far.
Yeah, I mean, there have been a few, outside of the Marlins, Blue Jays swapping teams, and, the Brandon Leake signing and some of those things, it's really been fairly quiet, which isn't uncommon for this part of the offseason. Going into the winter meetings, you pick up what you can in free agency, deals that are enticing to you. And then in winter meetings, you try to make some shifts happen. And, you know, not everyone's very active. The Brewers may not be as active as we think in the winter meetings, or as some people hope we might be. But they're definitely one of the teams that needs to make a little noise.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And, you know, the first thing we want to talk about today is how the Brewers can make noise, and that's going to be through starting pitching. Obviously, we have, at least in my mind, three set people for our rotation. That's Giovanni Gallardo, Mike Fiers, and probably Marco Estrada. And even then, it's still quite a gamble because it wasn't as assured as it was going into 2012. We had Sean Markham and Zach Greinke. We had two people who had prior starting experience, you know, for quite a few years. And then now we're going into 2013 with guys who didn't even have a full season of, you know, starting experience. So there's a lot, you know, to be done, not only with the Brewers' rotation, but their bullpen as well. But it ultimately starts with the rotation.
Oh, absolutely. And, yeah, like you said, it's probably not as confidence-boosting as going into last season was. But that's not necessarily a bad thing. You have Mike Fiers, who got roughed up a little bit down the home stretch in 2012. But, I mean, he has good command, he has decent poise, and he's got really good stuff. You have Willy Peralta in there that's gonna be fighting for one of those spots. And we really only saw him a few times, but of course he was brilliant most of that. And, you have Tyler Thornburg, who's going to be probably starting the year in AAA, but would not be surprising to see him up. Johnny Helweg will probably be an impact reliever at some point in 2013. And you have other players like Kyle Heckethorn, who did really well in the Arizona Fall League. And I believe he's down in AA, but you could see him shift up. I mean, could be a late-season call-up. You have the pieces, and really one veteran arm could make the difference. And there are a lot of guys out there that are interesting. I mean, you have bigger names like Kyle Loesch, and you have Edwin Jackson, and you have Ryan Dempster, NL Central foes who all played fairly well in Miller Park. But then you have other interesting names out there like Brandon McCarthy that I think could make a difference on this club. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do. In terms of trades, I don't know if it's going to happen as much in the trade market as it will through free agency. But I guarantee you, Ron Renneke made it very clear to Doug Melvin that he wants a veteran arm this year. He wants another veteran arm. And I see them, you know, making a move for one of those guys.
Yeah, if anything, it's probably going to be Ryan Dempster, which I would really not have a problem with, considering how well he's pitched in Miller Park. One guy who his name's always thrown around is Dan Herron. And I'm not sure Dan Herron would be the best of fits in Milwaukee, but he's had NL experience before with the Diamondbacks.
Right.
So, you know, he's an option. Kyle Loesch is an option.
Dan Herron's expensive option.
Yeah, I mean, you don't necessarily need pitchers who have just pitched in only NL. I mean, we could use a Brandon McCarthy type pitcher, per se.
Right. Well,
but
remember, I mean, Zach Greinke was in Kansas City before he moved to Milwaukee.
Yeah. So, I mean, that it doesn't always matter, you know, that huge transition. More so NL to AL because they're not really involved in the game as much anymore.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't really know exactly who the Brewers are going to go after. Like you said, I don't really think there's going to be many trades, really, if any. I don't think the Brewers are in a position to start trading people away because right now they're starting to put their farm together. And if they trade two, three big names, then everything they've worked for is gone, essentially. I mean, you have, you know, some guys we got in the Zach Greinke trade, like Oriel Peña and Johnny Helwig. But I don't want to trade the farm away. I think if the Brewers have to go through another year of trying to figure out, you know, okay, we can use this guy. He did well, you know, in the fall league. Maybe we can see how it does in spring training. Then maybe you do that. But as for a veteran arm, like you said, that Ron Renicki wants, there are options out there. You know, the two biggest ones I would see to go after would probably be Edwin Jackson and Ryan Dempster. I really like both of them. I think they're good pitchers. And I like Edwin Jackson because he's younger, and Ryan Dempster is older, but he has that veteran presence that he brings to a ball club.
Right, absolutely. And I do want to say one thing about the pitching. And not only does it make a good transition, but I know you're going to think I'm a little crazy. You'd be... It might be a little bit naive, but don't necessarily count the Brewers out for Zach Greinke again.
No, I am fully supportive of us trying to get Zach Greinke back. I think it's something that can happen.
Doug Melvin and Mark Attanasio both have said way earlier in the postseason that they think they would be able to go for broke, as they put it, on a big name signing. So, and I mean, you want a big name signing, who bigger?
Yeah. Because I saw yesterday on MLB Network that the Angels really, it's really looking bleak for them to try and re-sign Greinke. So the market for him has really been Dodgers and Rangers, but I really don't count the Brewers out there. They can make a stab to get, you know, their second ace back.
Right.
So I think that's something they could definitely do. Because the two big names, obviously, with the Brewers have been Greinke and Josh Hamilton. But, you know, I think, if anything, I think you have to go pitching all the way. You know, the offense is not bad. It's not something that really needs that extra fine-tuning, whereas the pitching does. Because that way, if you say you get Greinke, then you have at least four starters you know you can go with. Maybe that fifth role goes to Willie Peralta. Maybe it goes to Tyler Thornburg. If it, you know, say it goes to Willie Peralta, then you can have Mark Rogers and Tyler Thornburg who can pitch, you know, two, three innings in the bullpen.
Right.
And, I mean, it creates a lot of flexibility if the Brewers can sign somebody. Maybe even if it's not Greinke, if they can sign, like we said, a Ryan Dempster type person, then that helps even better because we have that other veteran presence along with Gallardo's success that would really create a positive chemistry in that rotation.
Right. No, absolutely.
So, bullpen-wise, the Cleveland Indians have designated Rafael Perez for assignment, which it sounds a lot worse. It makes him sound a lot worse than he actually is. But Rafael Perez did a, you know, long time setting up Chris Perez in Cleveland. And he's 7 years experience, 3.64 ERA, a projected salary of $2 million, which isn't that really, which really is not bad if you think about it.
Oh.
He's a good setup man. So, I mean, who else better to put it in the setup man role than somebody else? Because obviously, K-Rod's way out the door. We're not getting him back. We don't want him back.
Right.
So, what are your thoughts on Rafael Perez?
Like you said, I think, I mean, a dependable setup man with major league experience will be nice. We have Henderson for now as kind of a placeholder, who I wouldn't have a problem with either. And as you see this bullpen start to develop, you know, Michael Olmstead, who will probably be in the majors for a majority of the season, for a majority of this year. You have Jim Henderson. You have John Axford, obviously. Manny Parr is kind of the wild card. I don't know what we're doing with him. And like you said, Mark Rogers, Tyler Thornburg, these people that can kind of build it in. Another veteran presence in that bullpen is important. I mean, you saw what happened when John Axford kind of stood up and took that leadership role at the end of the season. You saw the difference that made. So having more veteran leadership could only be more helpful.
Yeah, and especially in this bullpen that we're trying to reconstruct, because, you know, basically everybody who was there is gone now. So
right.
It's really hard to try to piece together a new bullpen that's going to work. Obviously, Axford's still going to be there. Henderson's still going to be there. But everybody else is pretty much gone. So it's going to be, you know, and we can't jump off the ship if, you know, a week into the season, the bullpen has given up, you know, more runs than starting pitching, because we're going to have to get used to it. It's something that the Brewers are trying to reconstruct, are trying to create this art form for, that will hopefully turn into something that will stay solid, and we won't have guys like Tim Dillard and guys like Manny Parra and Cameron Lowe who are giving up, you know, 3-4 runs when they're put in. Because, you know, it's bad enough when we get that from the starting pitching, but to get that from a guy who's supposed to hold that slim 2-run lead and then gives it up. I mean, we saw that blow up in our faces so many times this season that, you know, the Brewers know that's their problem.
Right.
So maybe this time around it is veteran experience we need that can help these younger guys out. So maybe Rafael Perez is a guy. I mean, $2 million, that's not really a lot for a guy who has 7 years experience in the pen. I mean, really.
Right. You know, and it depends on what direction that the Brewers want to go. And like I said in an article I put out yesterday, it's very unclear the course that the Brewers are going to take this year. Because we haven't seen any real direction shaping up, and Doug Melvin and Gord Ash and those front office people have been fairly quiet in terms of what their strategy is going into the offseason. So maybe a cheap, dependable but not stellar option is kind of what they're after, doing a less with more kind of thing, or a more with less kind of thing, rather.
Yeah.
But it's highly possible that they're staying quiet because they have something really big in the works. You know, it's going to be a matter of time.
Yeah, it's really hard to tell exactly where the Brewers are going to go, because because you have to look at the Brewers 2011 and look at the 2012, and this was a team that went in two different directions for two different extremes. You have a team that in 2011 that wins the division hands out. Then you have a team in 2012 that is almost fighting in last to try to get out, you know, of the cellar.
Right.
So 2013, it's a toss-up right now. It's really hard to tell where this team is going. But we know that it has to center on pitching, because that wins you games in the end. I saw that Ryan Madsen signed with the Reds, and I thought he would be a good fit for our bullpen because of all the years he had in Philly setting up Lidge. But, you know, with the experience that Ryan Madsen has, he's going to more or less want a closer role, and we don't want to part ways with Axford, because despite his blemishes this season, he still managed, what, I believe 36 saves? So we have guys in place that we want to keep. Obviously, Gallardo, Axford, Fires, and Estrada. Beyond that, it's a toss-up of who goes where. So maybe a guy like Perez, maybe a guy like Dempster, if they get into this rotation, this whole pitching staff in general, can really shake things up and really help the Brewers evolve into, you know, a clear front runner and give the Reds a run for their money.
Right. No, I mean, that the Brewers, obviously, they're a piece or two away from where I stand. You know, one solid setup guy, and one veteran arm, really, from being a serious contender in this division.
Yeah, it's a lot of speculation right now, as it will be up until the winter meetings. When those happen, we'll see actually, you know, what these GMs are thinking. You know, you see all the rumors. I'm on the Brewers page right now, and just from Rumor Central, it says Brett Myers a low cost SP option. It says Myers wants to return to starting, and I'm just like, that's really kind of stretching it, though.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you can throw a name up somebody and hope it sticks, but when you just dig through something and just I that's what I get with the whole Josh Hamilton thing. I just never really got it because people are like, well, the hitting coach is there and that could, you know, help him. And just, but hitting coaches don't stay 7 or 8 years. I mean,
not usually, no.
I mean, it's rare to see that ever happen. So that's why I never really got the whole Josh Hamilton thing. But I don't know. I mean, pitching wise, this team needs help. It's, I don't think it's as seriously bad as we think it is. There's still a lot right with it that I like, but a lot of it is talent that hasn't proven itself yet, though.
Right. I think the more concerning thing, at least for me, is that I'm worried if the Brewers don't get on what they're planning soon, they're going to get priced out of pretty much anybody.
Yeah, and, you know, maybe signing Greinke again will do that. Maybe it'll get them, you know, off of their butts and, you know, into doing something productive. So if they fall too far behind, you know, a good example of that actually is the Indians, who management has been blamed for so long because they're too afraid to make moves and too afraid to sign people for, you know, 2 or 3 years and pay them this kind of money. And that's why the Indians have always done well to a point but fall off, because
Right. They
have young players who get a grip of things, but they don't have the entirety of it. They don't have that entire grasp of the Major League concept yet. So, yeah, it's going to suck that, you know, we're going to have to pay, say we get Greinke back, say pay him maybe $100 million or so for 6 or so years. But
Right. In
the long run, I think it will help. I think you have to have buyer's remorse here.
Yeah.
So, transitioning from that to actual other rumors is Josh Hamilton and that whole thing. Because basically it comes down to, there are two big name agents, like I said before, Greinke and Hamilton. And we just talked about the pitching. So offensively, is Hamilton a need or a want?
It depends on how you see Carlos Gomez projecting forward. If you see him projecting, you know, exponentially up from where he is, then Josh Hamilton is purely a want. But, I mean, a hitter with that kind of ability, that kind of supernatural ability, and not to mention the fact he's a decent center fielder, or a decent outfielder, I should say. He's not, you know, he's not a liability on defense, per se. I mean, I don't think you can look at him and say, oh, we couldn't use a guy like that on our team.
Well, yeah, everybody would like to have that, but the reality is of, you know, the money that he wants, and I think would be a lot more than what it would cost us to get Greinke for the same amount of years.
It's possible, but now it's looking that Greinke's going to be, you know, one of the most expensive right-handed pitchers in history, which would be ironic considering the last most expensive pitcher was CC Sabathia the year after he left Milwaukee. But, you know, looking at our needs, Zach Greinke, if we're talking about pipe dream free agents, Zach Greinke is obviously the one you want to get. But, I mean, if the money fits and the years fit, there's no reason not to take Hamilton on board.
You know, I'm looking at MLB trade rumors right now, I suppose from Monday, 2 days ago, and
yeah.
It says MLB executives see Zach Greinke obtaining a deal of at least 6 years for as much as $25 million a year. So if I can do my math right real quick, because I'm terrible at math, that's about $150 million for 6 years,
right.
Which is $25 million less than what Josh Hamilton wants. So at that point, it's just, what do you need more? And how much are you willing to give for more? At this point, I still say Greinke. I think our offense, even if Carlos Gomez doesn't go above and beyond our expectations of him, this is a team that still has Ryan Braun. This is a team that still has Norichika Oki and Aramis Ramirez and Jonathan Lucroy and Corey Hart. This is a team that still has offense. So, well, yeah, it would be nice to have a guy who could hit 40 home runs and 120 RBIs in addition to Braun. You know, that's more of something that it would be nice to have, but Josh Hamilton doesn't pitch. So.
Right.
it's really hard to, you know, speculate, well, if we get him, it's even more or less, if we get him, what do we do with Gomez? Is he instant trade bait at that point? Is he in maybe Norichika Aoki instant trade bait? I don't think Aoki so much, but Gomez, a lot of teams are going to see that as potential.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you do that, you're getting Hamilton, you're locking him in for, I believe it's 7 years, $175 million, for putting up Gomez as trade bait and getting probably prospects for him. I don't think any team is going to trade a decent halfway starter for a guy who's only played one full season in center.
Well, right. But I think you could definitely, I mean, you could platoon Gomez and Aoki in right field if you wanted to. I know a lot of people don't like that. They consider, they think Aoki should be an everyday guy. But there's nothing damaged by having those two split time in right field. You know, having Gomez go every fifth game or so. You know, and you could package Gomez with someone else, like a, you know, Matt Gamble, Taylor Green, whatever, and you could get, you know, a reliever with some experience. I mean, there are innumerable ways to make this work. But, I mean, if you get Hamilton, I think Gomez definitely becomes a person who slides towards that trading block. Obviously, whether or not that happens is pure speculation at this point. But, I mean, to me, the point of, or the idea of having Hamilton and Braun together for 7 years, backing each other up, plus another year with Aramis Ramirez, I mean, it's all you can do to not start drooling, really.
Yeah, I mean, you have that lineup. I mean, that meat of the order would be ridiculous. You'd have Braun, Hamilton, Ramirez, Lucroy, Hart. It would just be a manager's dream to see that.
Yeah, because you either get pummeled, or you have to walk the bases loaded. I mean, really.
Yeah, I mean, that would just be incredible. I mean, I'm not... I know it sounds, in the articles I've written in a previous podcast, that I'm so against getting Hamilton. It's not that. It's not that I'm so against getting him. It's just the fact that I don't think he's a necessity to the team. I think... Because they always say, you know, well, at the right price. Well, there is no right price for Hamilton. It's what he says, or you're not getting him. I think if we were a little bit more pitching heavy, if we had, you know, guys we knew could start games, and we didn't have a problem with our bullpen, then yeah, I'd say, okay, let's make a stab at Hamilton. But in the same respects, though, if you platoon Gomez and have him play every fifth game, that kills your speed, because Gomez stole 37 bases this season. So, I mean, he's a threat around the bases, and we need that more than anything. Because we have him, we have Braun, and probably Aoki, but that's it. We need speed, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. But when you have... that kind of power in your lineup, speed doesn't become as much of a necessity.
No, but it's nice to have, because...
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's always nice to have.
Because, I mean, Miller Park is not necessarily a hitter's ballpark. It can be in some regards, but you hit it to dead center, it's probably not going out.
Right.
And if Hamilton hits it to dead center, and it hits off the wall, and the, you know, center field is nowhere near it, and Gomez is on first, he can easily score.
Oh, well, yeah.
So, I mean, it's
nice. So Braun, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to have that. But, I mean, yeah, obviously, Hamilton is 10 times an upgrade from what we have in center with Carlos Gomez. But I just don't know if that's really a risk worth taking. Because you look at teams like the Angels, you look at teams like the Yankees, who signed, you know, these gargantuan superstars for how long, and, you know, Pujols took forever to get back on track, and he still didn't do that great this season. A-Rod is regressing huge for the Yankees, so that's a huge thing. But then again, you have the same thing if we were to sign Greinke for that long, and he started to not do well after, you know, 2-3 seasons, and we'll say, well, he sucks now, he can't pitch. But I mean, that's the risk you take, and it's just, what's more of a risk that you want to take, the pitching of the offense?
Right.
That's essentially what it really comes down to. So.
And I mean, you definitely need more pitching on the Brewers than you do offense. No one will dispute that. But if you, let's say the Brewers have some secret slush fund of, you know, 100+ to throw at one of these big names, and you throw it at Greinke and he sends it right back to you. Well, then why not take that money and try to put it towards Hamilton?
Well, yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, you score more runs, you win, obviously enough. So if you can't get that big name pitcher or that, you know, that really, really high performing starter, then why not just add a little extra ammunition to the lineup and kind of see what happens?
Yeah, it's certainly not, you know, a bad idea to try and see what we could do with Hamilton. If we had him. But in the same regards, it's just, it really is a risk, because with the relapses, with everything else, you have to wonder, how is he going to play out here? But I don't know. That's why we talked about so much before, about guys being trade bait. And, you know, we could trade for somebody who's not exactly Josh Hamilton, but just as good. Whoever that may be, I don't know at this point. But that's why it was so key to watch some of these guys in the fall league, because not all of them, you know, probably will end up playing for us 2-3 years from now. They probably might be trade bait for somebody else.
Right.
Because, I mean, I don't think the Angels really thought they wanted to part ways with Ariel Pena, Gene Segura, and Johnny Helwig going into July, and then they did with us. And, you know, getting Greinke back would be like the ultimate slap in the face to the Angels from the Brewers.
Oh, it certainly would.
And, but
it would be the baseball coup of the century.
Oh, it really would be. And then, you know, I don't know if we play the Angels next year, but that'd be hilarious to see us play them and we have Greinke start against them.
Right.
With Segura at short and Helwig in the bullpen and, you know. But, I don't know, it's just, these rumors aren't going to die down anytime soon, and we'll see in the next week or so which way these rumors are going to go. But really, that's really been it with Milwaukee. There hasn't been a whole lot other than Greinke and Hamilton.
Right.
So, looking at, you know, the entirety of free agency, though, it's been also kind of quiet, other than, you know, you said the Marlins and Blue Jays switching teams, essentially. You do have Ryan Matson, like I said, going to the Angels for a year. Andy Pettitte looks to get a deal soon with the Yankees, an $11 million deal for, I believe, 1 year. Hiroki Kura re-signed with the Yankees. The Pirates acquired Vin Mazzaro, I think that's how you say it. I don't know.
Right.
And Clint Robinson from the Pirates. So, I mean, there are a few things going on, you know, not a whole lot, but another big thing that I want to look at real quick was something Colin and I were talking about a little bit before the podcast started, was the Mets. And this whole thing with David Wright and R.A. Dickey, the Mets have offered David Wright a 7-year extension. I believe it's in the ballpark from anywhere of $120 million to $150 million with that sign-in bonus he had, I believe, going into 2013.
Right.
But, you know, the Mets are an interesting team because they don't have anything other than R.A. Dickey and David Wright. And people say, well, you know, you trade David Wright, you're killing the team. But you have to look at the future, because you have to look at who you're getting in return for David Wright. You know, possible suitors for him, I don't know who's out there. The Brewers certainly aren't one with Aramis Ramirez at third. But, you know, there's a team that can use a third baseman, and David Wright could very well go there. R.A. Dickey, though, I think you have to try and keep. With Johan Santana, you know, it seems like the man's always battling injuries somewhere on the line and then just struggles in the season. If you're the Mets, I think you have to trade David Wright. It may be hard to do. It may hurt. But I think trading Wright's the only option you have at this point.
Well, if you can't sign both of them, Wright probably gives you more in return value. But the fact that they didn't start right away on both of them and really be aggressive in trying to re-sign them, would make me a little uneasy as a Mets fan. Because even though, you're right, they don't have a whole lot, you know, in the tank behind them, you're talking about a Cy Young winner, multiple complete game shutouts, and one of the most stellar pitching performances we've seen in a long, long time over the course of a season. And, you know, you're talking about David Wright, a guy who's been there with the Mets day in and day out, performing really well when, I mean, essentially he had no reason to there.
Yeah.
And, I mean, those are the people that this franchise is, that the fan base is rallying around. And the fact that you're not, even publicly, you know, outside of this offer that came through earlier this week, you were doing nothing except talking about the fact that you'd like to see them stay. Well, if you're a Mets fan, I mean, what are you holding on to there at this point if they're gone?
Yeah, I mean, but you have to look at the fact that if you keep David Wright, the Mets are already in the toilet, you know, economic-wise. They don't have a lot. And if they sign David Wright for this 7 years, say $150 million, then that just completely destroys their chances for the next 7 years to try and regroup this team into being anything. You have the Nationals, who went on a surge this year. You have the Braves, who are still really good. You have the Marlins, who fell off. You have, and then you have the Phillies, who are, at the end of the day, still the Phillies, who can, you know, compete with you. So the Mets have hope as long as the Marlins continue to blow up their team constantly.
Right.
But I actually was looking through some of the teams, and I found an interesting suitor for David Wright if he were to be traded, and that would be probably none other than actually the Atlanta Braves, with Chipper gone now. Michael Korn's a free agent, Jeff Baker's a free agent, Matt Diaz is a free agent, Eric Hinsky and Reed Johnson are free agents. That frees up a lot of money.
Did they non-tender Jair Gurdjieff too?
I believe so.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in the outfield, even with losing five of those guys, you still have Jason Hayward and Martin Prado in the outfield. So yeah. It's not like the Braves are really losing a lot here. I mean, they are, but, I mean, they still have stuff to back it up. And if you were free, at least, what is that? I want to say around 13 or so million. I mean, it's obviously not what the exact kind of money that David Wright's going to want, but, I mean, they need a third baseman, and who better than David Wright?
Right, and well, that I mean, that amount of money right there fits in well with a nice 1 year deal, probably for him, or like a 2 year deal. But you know, the way I think about it, getting back to from the Mets' perspective, let's say you can only keep one. Obviously, you're going to want to keep David Wright.
If I was the Mets, I would keep R.A. Dickey.
I mean, there's not a really bad answer, but let's say you want to keep Wright for the sake of this argument.
Okay.
Because as that came out of my mouth, I was like, wait, I want Wolf. but let's say you decide you have to keep Wright.
Okay.
So you lock him up for a 5 or 7 year deal, and yeah, you don't have a whole lot behind him, but you still have a farm system. You can still make prospect deals. There's still free agents that come cheap and can do well. So you have, you know, a consistently, like, middle-of-the-road team that can make a few good pushes over those 7 years. Or you get rid of both David Wright and R.A. Dickey for essentially nothing, and or prospects or whatever. And once again, I mean, you're mortgaging your future for 2 to 3 years, right? Yeah. And you're not... And you don't even have anyone that's drawing in fans. So I think if I'm looking at it from a financial standpoint as the Mets, I want one of those names so at least I have butts in the seats.
I don't even think the Mets are drawing in fans now. maybe 20 more than they were last year. I don't know.
That's true.
But I think they might have all been converted to go to the other side of New York and become Yankees fans.
Heresy.
But you know, if I'm the Mets, I don't remember who their owner is. I think is Manaea still the owner? Omar Manaea?
You know, I don't really know.
I believe. Oh, Fred Wilpon. Okay. Yeah, because they got rid of Manaea like a long time ago. If I'm Fred Wilpon, I look at the situation and I see, okay, our pitching is awful. It is some of the, I mean, they were first in quality starts, mm-hmm. but then it falls off after that. 20th in ERA, 19th in WHIP, 14th in opponent's batting average. I mean, you know, offensively, they weren't really any better because they all went around David Wright. But,
right.
you know, there are guys in this rotation, not rotation, there are guys in this lineup that can hit, maybe not exactly for average, but guys like Ike Davis and Daniel Murphy and Justin Turner, they can hit. It's a gamble to take, but if you trade David Wright for a few, you know, no-names, those no-names could be some huge players. I keep bringing the Indians up so much, but I don't know why, because I think of an example when they traded Bartolo Colon all those years ago.
Is it because you're used to seeing the Indians sell off everything they have?
Yeah, that I guess so, because, you know, living around this area, I guess it kind of happens all the time. And, you know, because I live an hour from Cleveland, and I live about an hour from Pittsburgh, so right. it happens in both cities. So I'm used to seeing it happen. But I remember a few years ago when the Indians traded Bartolo Colon, and they got a few no-names in Grady Sizemore and Cliff Lee, and people were like, well, who are these guys? And, I mean, Grady maybe not so much, but Cliff Lee, I mean, come on.
Right.
So, you know, maybe the Mets could get that in a trade with David Wright, because you really don't have anything pitching-wise. You have maybe, and I stress the maybe here for Dylan Gee. Maybe in Matt Harvey you have something. He hasn't had a whole lot of time up here. I mean, he was just a rookie this year. But I think if you want to center your rotation around anybody, you're going to have to center it around R.A. Dickey, and that is a huge part of the rotation. Ideally, yeah, they would like to keep both, but I just don't see that happening. I think
they're getting slimmer that they'll keep either.
Yeah, I think at one point you're going to have to say, okay, we're keeping this guy. Because you have to look at David Wright. He made $15 million in 2012, whereas R.A. Dickey made $4 million. Obviously, R.A. Dickey's probably going to want a little bit more money, winning the Cy Young and all, and doing really well this season. And David Wright's still going to want more money because he's David Wright, and he's just that good. But in the long run of things, you have to look at, where do we want to be in 5 years? Do we want to be in the whole 5 years with David Wright still, or do we want to have a chance at being in the playoffs in 5 years with a team that we could build around if we trade David Wright? I know that's a bit of a stretch to say that, but if you, like I said, if you continue to pour money into David Wright, you are literally killing your chances of getting anything. I mean, we think that Brewers have hardly any chances to try to sign anybody. The Mets are even worse shape than we are. So, I mean, this is a team that has really done nothing since the Subway Series of 2000 and just is trying to find their place. And with the Nationals rising up in this division, it makes it that much harder.
Right.
So,
no, I mean, I wholeheartedly agree with you. That division has never really been the Mets' division, and it's slipping either further or even further away from them. But, I mean, financially, I do not envy that team.
No. I don't even think, like, the Astros envy that team.
Right.
Because as much fun as people make of the Astros, watch them win the World Series in the next 10 years or something.
Right.
And that would be something. Next thing is on the agenda, which is a very controversial thing we've talked about before. We talked about it for, God, I think a good 30 minutes last week, or the 2 weeks before.
Right.
The whole steroids issue. And we're not talking about the steroids issue here, necessarily. We're talking about the 37-player ballot that was announced for the Hall of Fame. On this are some pretty big names. Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Sammy Sosa, Craig Biggio, Mike Piazza, Curt Schilling, Jack Morris, Jeff Bagwell, Tim Raines. And that's just who's just on this, just for right now.
Don't forget Jeff Cirillo, former Brewer.
Yeah. Yep. On this, also, there's Bernie Williams, David Wells, Rafael Palmeiro and Mark McGuire, Don Mattingly, Kenny Lofton. So this is a class that, you know, is a pretty big part of baseball in the 90s and even into the early 2000s. So,
hey, it might be Donnie Ballgame's year.
Maybe so. It's interesting because this is the first time really in baseball we've had some of the hugest name players linked with, you know, steroids and PEDs all on the ballot together. And this is really interesting because you do this and you vote them in, you're going to have two huge sides opposing this. One side opposing each other. You're going to have one side that supports this, one side that thinks that baseball's tainted, ruined forever because these guys got into the Hall of Fame.
Right.
So, well, we've talked about it before. I don't really want to get into another five-hour discussion about the steroid issue. I'll say this much, though. If Bonds, Sosa, Clemens, Palmeiro get in, you need to put an asterisk by their name. I'm not necessarily opposed to them getting in. In a sense, I am, because I think if you're linked with steroids, you shouldn't even be in the Hall of Fame. And if they decide to put them in the Hall of Fame, I think the next person that should be in is Pete Rose. But, no, it's just... Because, baseball is a game that we talked about is built on, you know, performance and the skills you build. Steroids do not affect hand-eye coordination, but they do, in fact, affect power.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a slippery slope that this argument goes upon. But if anything, I think Mike Piazza needs to be in out of all these people. But, Colin, what's your take on this, on the whole ballot?
I think this year is a great year for Mark Piazza. It's a great chance for Jeff Bagwell to get in. I think you're going to see a shift in the next, like, 5 to 10 years as some of the old guard of sports writers kind of move on and make way for newer people on the ballots in terms of who's filling them out. I wouldn't have a problem if they get in to have to put on their plaque, like, oh, he was implicated in using steroids. But at the end of the day, the Hall of Fame is, as much as it is about, you know, it's about determining who had the biggest impact on the game in their generation. Who was the biggest, the biggest names, the most dependable people, the stars of the game. So, I mean, from that perspective, you can't deny Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Rafael Palmeiro even, Sammy Sosa, Larry Walker, as people that had a tremendous impact on the game, for better or for worse. And I don't think, excuse the term, I don't think whitewashing the whole history of the game is going to do anybody any good. We've had enough, in my opinion, of turning a blind eye and pushing steroids under the rug. They have the numbers to get in. A lot of these guys had the numbers before there was any evidence that they were doing anything wrong. And for a short time during that steroids era, they literally weren't doing anything wrong. So, you know, by the rules of the game. So, I mean, I think ignoring the issue and pushing these people off, it's not like we're ever going to forget about Mark McGwire or Sammy Sosa. I could not stop talking about them when I was growing up during that home run chase season. You know, you couldn't go a day without hearing about Barry Bonds at the height of his career with the Giants. It's not going to change what happened, not letting them in. And, you know, you look at guys like Ty Cobb and Mickey Mantle and you know, these people that had very, very dark sides at a time where we weren't covering that sort of thing as members of the media. Ignoring that these things happened isn't going to change that. I think it would be an important message for fans and media members and voters and baseball historians and people in the front office everywhere to accept that this happened, make note of it, explain to future generations how this happened and how we got here, and then move on from there. I say, you know, let them in. I don't care if you have to put an asterisk in. I don't care if you have to say this guy was a dirty, horrible cheater. Whatever you want to do to satisfy that kind of egoism inside yourself that says, like, oh, I'm, you know, we are above these guys because they did wrong, that's fine if that's what you got to do, but let them in.
You know, it's such an interesting argument for this because you have really two sides. They shouldn't be in and they should be in. So the people that say they shouldn't be in, they're cheaters, you know, they've ruined the game of baseball, they're disrespecting it. If we allow them in, we're only influencing cheating and we're praising it. But you have people who say let them in because, like you said, you know, who knows how long this has gone on undocumented. Who knows how long people have been doing this, you know, changing the game in different sorts of ways. Because you look at, like, even yesterday, Carlos Ruiz got a 25-game suspension for amphetamines.
Yes, the amphetamines, yep.
So,
and then cocaine and other illicit drugs in the 70s and 80s. And you have greenies and that sort of thing from the 19-teens into the 40s.
You look at Doc Ellis, who threw a no-hitter on LSD back in the 70s. So, I mean, obviously, somebody would have to know if you're on LSD or not. That's not like, I'm not saying I've ever done it, I'm just saying. You know, I don't do drugs,
people. Sounding mighty defensive there.
No, but I mean, I don't do drugs, but I mean, you can tell when somebody is on something. And you would have to know, especially if he's your starting pitcher that day, that he's not all there. So it becomes a very interesting argument of the Hall of Fame. Because we're in such a weird transition period. We're in the transition period that we're in, well, do we let them in, do we not let them in? 10 years from now, we'll know whether or not we'll let them in. 50 years from ago, we didn't know whether or not we were going to let people in. We're still kind of in that. We're heading towards the end of it, but we're heading towards a more definitive answer. I still have to say you can't let them in, only to make a point for future generations of baseball. Yet Barry Bonds may have very well had Hall of Fame numbers before his name was even linked to steroids. But the fact that his name overall is end up being linked to steroids, same with Mark McGwire and Rafael Palmeiro and Roger Clemens and Sammy Sosa, that negates any... If I was a voter, that would negate any vote I would have for them. Because, yeah, it may not be fair if we say maybe Ty Cobb or one of those guys or Babe Ruth was on something in there, and but, you know, Barry Bonds isn't. You know, that may be unfair, and I say that in air quotes. But that's the point we have to make for future generations, is we cannot allow this to go on. We need to make a stopping point somewhere. And I think this transition period is the hugest part of that.
Well, and I look at this from this perspective, and it's something I've been thinking about a lot, possibly for longer-term projects down the road. But you look at a guy like Marvin Miller, who died yesterday, the first head of the most famous head, regardless of the Major League Baseball Players Association, the guy who single-handedly destroyed the reserve clause and brought baseball into free agency and shifted the way we look at modern sports forever. You look at what he did for a guy like Curt Flood, who was essentially banned from baseball because he wouldn't go play in Philly, which was highly segregated. Curt Flood, being a black man, did not want to live and work in a place where he felt like a second-class citizen. So you look at things like this that really helped out the league, and Marvin Miller's not in the Hall of Fame because the committee that votes executives in is made up mainly of executives who really didn't like him. You look at all of the great African-American players from the Negro Leagues that were lost completely to history because they were allowed to play with whites. You look at Latin players who weren't allowed to play for, you know, a century. And, you know, we talk about those things now. We can have an open discussion about the fact that, you know, baseball did a horrendous wrong to a lot of people by segregating the sport. And we can talk about that, and we can let, you know, these discussions kind of happen. And part of that is because we've included those histories into the history and the culture of the game and the country. Why can't we do the same thing with steroids? I think letting them into the hall and saying these guys did something wrong, but they're part of the culture of the game, and we need to understand, recognize, and move forward from that. Shunning them from the Hall of Fame is just us wanting to hide the fact that we were complicit in this crime, I think.
I can't really agree with that, because you need a definitive stopping point to where you can say, we don't allow this. Baseball doesn't tolerate this anymore. There's been a point where baseball has been so over-abused. I don't mean the people who run baseball. I mean the sport itself. Like you said, by segregation, by things like that. But there needs to be a way to try and stop some of this. Stop some of it. You're not going to stop all of it. And I think not letting these guys in isn't doing them a disservice. It isn't snubbing them. It's showing to future generations that will come into Major League Baseball what not to do. You know, will it make the game pure? No. Will it help make the game a little bit clean? Probably not. But you have to make some sort of definitive move towards it. I don't really see it being a slap in the face of these guys. As you said earlier, nobody's going to forget who Sammy Sosa and Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire are, regardless whether or not they're in the Hall of Fame. Nobody's going to forget who they are, you know, 10, 20 years from now. They're still going to be remembered as baseball, and I say legends in quotes, because I don't say that because I don't think they are, but you have two different mindsets that either hate Barry Bonds or love Barry Bonds. So
right.
They will be in baseball forever, regardless of not whether or not they're in the Hall of Fame. So it's really, really a slippery slope here on what you do.
And I think we need to decide whether our job is to recognize that for a long time, the media was in the business of hero building. When you look at Babe Ruth, who was an alcoholic, womanizer, all of that. Mickey Mantle, same thing. And, you know, sorry, keep picking on Yankees, but
that's,
you
know, fine.
Those are the biggest names. And we don't talk about the fact that, you know, people that Hank Aaron played with, you know, were racist, and we still consider a lot of the people on that team who didn't initially want to play with Hank Aaron, or the people that wanted to play with Willie Mays, you know, were bad people. Willie McCovey and Bobby Bonds were both terrible alcoholics, you know? There's a lot of this in history that we didn't talk about until years later, when the baseball media and the sports media in general got out of the business of hero building and start getting into the business of hero destruction. And I think we need to move into a time where we just accept athletes as human beings. And human beings make mistakes, they do things poorly, they try to get an advantage when they can, and that's just being human. And until I think we can accept athletes as human beings who happen to play a sport for our entertainment and stop thinking of them as people that we need to put up on a pedestal, that's why you have parents and teachers and guidance counselors and members of your community that set good examples. You know, this discussion isn't going to make any traction. And I think we as members of the media, and I say that in air quotes because we're about at the farthest boundary line that you can get, you know, we need to start looking at this different.
Yeah, I mean, you made a very good point. We have to start seeing players, football players, baseball players, basketball players, hockey players, any sport, we need to see these players as humans. We can't heroize them. We can't criminalize them. And they do make mistakes. But I'm not saying some mistakes are worse than others, in a sense, but they are. I'm not trying to justify, you know, Babe Ruth being a womanizer and alcoholic over Mark McGwire and Barry Bonds supposedly doing steroids. Well, Mark McGwire did do steroids. He admitted to it. But I'm not going to say it's a worse thing that Babe Ruth did or a worse thing that Mark McGwire did. They're both equally as bad when you bring them into the retrospect that is baseball. It doesn't do the game a service. It really puts a tarnish on the game and what it stands for. And people think that, you know, baseball stands for this segregated game that up until, you know, really the 60s, 70s, and even into today, really is trying to unify itself around, you know, Latino American players, Asian players, and what else you whatever you have. I think there are a few Australian players in the league. So it's hard to try and humanize baseball when it's been heroized and now being decriminalized for so long. But if we want to make any sort of progress for it, you have to put your foot down if you're Bud Selig or the next commissioner, whoever that may be. And you have to make some moves that, yeah, they might piss off a lot of people, but you're going to have to make a move regardless. You can't just hem-haw around the problem anymore and just let it continue on and on and on, because nothing will get solved, and you're just going to have a bigger controversy than what you have now.
Well, it's possible, and but part of it for me is, I mean, it's kind of minute-wise and hour-foolish to suddenly say, like, oh, well, these guys aren't worthy of this when, you know, Bud Selig and owners across the country and fans across the country and media members across the country spent so long telling us how great these people were and how we should look up to them and knew that this stuff was around and chose not to discuss it. I mean, look at how amphetamines is just becoming a story today. Mm-hmm. You think that Adderall and other amphetamines just started with Ruiz? No, they've been around forever, and people chose to ignore it. You look at the NFL, you look at the concussions and the violent hits, and you say, you know, thank God for Roger Goodell and the NFL for making a difference on that. This is, it's silly, because they put out hundreds of videos and clips and highlights of quarterbacks and wide receivers and running backs just getting demolished by linebackers. And suddenly now we're on a great crusade to fix this. I mean, you have to be able to have a real life conversation about this. And I think baseball and, you know, the Baseball Writers Association of America is simply burying their head in the sand on it.
Yeah, because they try to treat these players like demigods on pedestals that can do no wrong. And when they do, you have to shun them from whatever. And for the most part, Colin, I really do agree with you, except for the fact that I think we need to just not let these players in just to make a statement for future generations. Like I said, I don't think it's going to really stop anything, but it has to be a definitive stopping point for something. And yeah, it's not going to justify all the people that are in the Hall of Fame that were alcoholics and who knows what else they did in their personal lives that we don't know about, or that people, either teammates knew about that we'll never know about because the media never wanted to publicize it. You know, that's, you know, unfortunately gone and done with. We can't do anything about it. It's irreversible. But if we want to prevent that from happening, we have to take players as humans and look at the mistakes and accomplishments they make and, I guess, see which outweighs the other one. It's really hard because you are going to step on some toes here. But once we start seeing players as people, you know, up until that point, we're just going to have this giant storm of God knows what.
Right.
So.
And that's why I'm throwing all of my publicity muscle right behind Jeff Cirillo. Yeah. We need another brewer in the hall.
I mean, we can't get any to win, you know, gold gloves. Let's get something good this year.
So. Right. No kidding.
I mean, I don't even get me started on the races and all that crap. Who did we talk about the last time?
I mean, man, there are a lot of interesting names on this list that I did not see the first time.
Well, actually, we can talk about the MVP race real quick because that was before our last show.
Yeah.
So,
Kenny Lofton's on the ballot.
Yeah, he is. I saw that. Todd Walker, Larry Walker. I saw Mike Stanton, and I'm like, wait a minute, what?
Sandy Alomar Jr.
Yeah. Edgar Martinez.
Deep, deep ballot this year.
Jeff Conine. Wow. Steve Finley. Julio Franco. But, yeah, let's just talk about this MVP race that happened real quick. Let's talk about the AL first. I think this could be a good ending point is the races. So, Colin, since we didn't get to talk honestly about it, what is your take on the AL MVP, even though it happened, you know, like a week or two ago?
Right. I mean, it was, like we said before, there wasn't really a wrong answer there. And I think it was a stand by the media to say, like, you know, the Triple Crown means something. The arguments that the Triple Crown is an award in and of itself are, I mean, false arguments. Because if there was a Triple Crown award, someone would probably win it every year. Triple Crown is math. The batting title is math. You know, those things are definitive things that happen. They're not subjective. And I think they made the vote to say that, you know, this is something that hasn't been done in a long time, and it should mean something, and you should be duly recognized for that. And I think that's good. And I think they knew Mike Trout's going to have more good years ahead of him. Mike Trout's probably going to have a couple MVP awards of his own. He's in the race this year. He's rookie of the year. You know, he's God knows whatever other awards he's picked up. And he's on his way to an outstanding career. But what Miguel Cabrera did this year was important.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not necessarily, like, upset about it, but my stance toward it is the same one towards the stance in the NL MVP, is I'm not really upset with Cabrera winning, but I don't think the margin he won by should have been that. I think it should have been much closer. I don't think Cabrera wins it hands down, because if you give Trout that extra month that Cabrera has, that Trout doesn't, Trout maybe has a few, and I mean a few less maybe RBIs than Cabrera, maybe a few less home runs. But other than that, he would... I still think it's, you know, a shame he didn't win a Gold Glove. But, I mean, I wanted Trout to win, but I'm not really upset with Cabrera winning. I just think the margin was just a little bit ridiculous. Kind of like in the NL, I think Posey's margin over Braun was completely ridiculous. I don't think Posey should have won by that much.
Right.
I'm not necessarily upset that Posey won. I think if, because you have to factor in the playoff thing, and I think that whole thing's crap. But obviously he's the only one that really gets there, because Yadier Molina wasn't even close to him offensively. But you look at his defense, and Yadier Molina was a little bit better than Posey, whereas nobody really matched Braun in the outfield.
No. And breaking down the ballot, I've since lost the bookmark to where I had it, and it was everything I could do to keep quiet on the subject, just because I didn't really feel like throwing my hat into the ring in mm-hmm. that argument at the time. But you look at some of those West Coast votes where Ryan Braun's getting, you know, third place, or even I think he got a fourth place vote in there too. It just seems a little silly at that point that you are, I mean, at that point, if you want to make a statement vote, that's fine. I don't agree with it. It's definitely your right, but I mean, there were obviously a few writers in there that were making a personal statement against Ryan Braun.
Yeah, and I mean, did that cost Braun the MVP? Did that give Posey the MVP? I don't know. I can't say for certain. We can only speculate, like, what we've been doing the entire show today. Yeah. But,
I think when you give a player like Braun a fourth-place vote, you do it with a knowing intention that you are costing him that race.
Well, yeah, I mean, fourth place, even third place is a little bit ridiculous, because obviously you have Andrew McCutchen and Yadier Molina also in this race, but it was obviously between Braun and Posey. And giving Braun anything really short of second, I think, is a clear indication that you don't want him to win. I don't know, I mean, it would have been cool to have Braun win back-to-back MVPs.
Right.
But I really don't know how Posey wins by that margin, though. I just don't get it. I mean, congratulations again to him and to Miguel Cabrera for winning, but the margins they won by, I just think, is a little bit ludicrous.
Right, and that's why I thought about posing this question. Posed it to a couple friends I know, but I thought it might be fun to give to you. What would you think if the voting were to shift to, say, every Major League manager and every Major League GM had the votes instead of writers from every city? I tend to think that it would balance it out a lot more.
Maybe. We see such an unbalance sometimes, though, with like the All-Star game. And we say, well, this guy got snubbed tremendously, and this guy's in here, and he shouldn't be in here. And, you know, obviously that last vote's the fan vote, but I mean, like, pitchers, they're picked by the managers. And I think it would be a little more balanced because obviously writers, you know, the media, they have things to write about. They have to put their certain, I guess, and I say in air quotes, agendas out there. You know, being a GM, being a manager, you have that firsthand experience in knowing what that player is like. We only see it from our TVs, hear it from our radios, see it when we go to the ballparks, but they're with them 162 games a season. The managers more so than the GMs. But, yeah, I think it would help balance it out. I don't think it'd be the perfect solution for it, but I think in a sense it might put a little bit more legitimacy into these awards.
Right, and I mean, I'm certainly not going to make the argument that, you know, the way that it's currently voted on isn't working. But I think we are genuinely at a point where the media is more polarized. And in 24-hour news cycles, I mean, you do want to make mountains out of molehills. And to some degree, that's your job. And so I couldn't help but wonder if the people that are in the game, you know, excuse the tired phrase, but in the trenches every day, wouldn't have a better perspective on what value means for a player.
Yeah, because we see it from our perspective and they see it from their perspective. So, you know, they'll know how the player functions, how the player works with his teammates, how the player just does overall. And what we saw from Ryan Braun this year, he can carry the team on his back and then some. So, I don't know. I think we really need to get rid of the rule that says you have to get to the postseason to be considered to be an MVP winner. I don't like that rule at all. I think it's really awful, especially for a team like Milwaukee, who was so close to getting there. And really none of it was Ryan Braun's fault. None of it was any of the offense's fault. It was all because of the pitching. I think if you don't factor in those things, you're really snubbing a lot of guys from winning this award.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you.
So, I mean, yeah, I would like it if, you know, the actual people who are in baseball got to vote on it. But like you said, there's not a lot that's wrong with this current system other than probably media bias. But like the old saying goes, another old tired saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So.
All right.
It's not at the point where we think we should need to remodel the entire system, but it could use some fine-tuning.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Well, is there anything else you would like to add today, Colin?
Go Brewers?
Go Brewers, yeah. check out Taylor Green, still in the Dominican League. We didn't really get around talking about him, but one of us will probably have an article up in a few days monitoring him. That's a hard word to say.
Strong, buddy. You'll make it. We're almost to the finish.
But, yeah, we're probably going to go again in 2 weeks on December 12th if you want to stick around for that show.
Day before my birthday. It'll be a big one.
Awesome. Today actually is my birthday, but... So.
Oh, you sly dog. You never mentioned it.
Yep. 20 years old. Woohoo. But
you're 1 year away from the last important birthday.
But yeah, obviously a lot of this right now is still speculation. We're gonna see next week when the winter meetings start in Tennessee, and then we'll talk about it the week after. You know what the Brewers might do, what the Cardinals and Reds might do in the same division, and how it's gonna affect baseball. Obviously, we had the one monster trade between the Blue Jays and the Marlins that nobody really liked. Selig was just completely, he had to go with it, but he didn't really want to. That's why it took so long, he was stalling it.
Right.
And possibly we might even see another instance of the MLB ousting an owner, much like they did it in LA with Frank McCourt. They might do the same with Jeffrey Loria, I don't know. But it's going to be a very interesting week next week with the winter meetings.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to it.
All right, well, thank you again for listening. As always, stay tuned for next time.
See you guys.